May I just add that there has been a second concession made by the Riyadh recently on the refugee question. They have accepted that the question of the resettlement or the return of the Arab refugees into Palestine, into the divided Palestine, should begin on the basis of the return of only those Arabs who have led that part of the country who has been occupied by Israeli forces over the borders fixed in the 19 in the partition plan. So this is, I think, a second very valuable contribution, and you can't ask very much more from people who have seen a part of their a part of the territory of a friendly and a brotherly state occupied by other people.
I'm afraid we can't go on with that. I'm going to ask Professor Salim to interpret clearly for Mr. Ernst and the moderator and the audience exactly what points you're making, because as I understand, the Arab states have not accepted the principle of partition completely. And the other point you raise, I'd like Professor Salim to clarify, please.
I think he's pointing out the difference in treatment towards the United Nations meted out by the Arabs and by the communists in Korea. The communists are refusing to give in to the request for ceasefire and for a peace parley, whereas the Arabs, at the first request, have accepted a ceasefire, have accepted an armistice, and are now on semi-peaceful terms with Israel. That is a more civilized behavior than what the communists are doing in Korea. Something that hasn't been appreciated enough till we have seen how the Far Eastern devils are behaving.
Yes. All right. Lord Wilmot wanted to make a comment there.
Well, I just wanted to ask the professor one question. I understand the desire of a country to get rid of a foreign army. I want to ask him this question. Can he induce his government to guarantee the right of the people of the Sudan, who are not Egyptian but African people, Negroid people, to choose their own destiny as the people of India have done?
This is like Britain asking Abraham Lincoln whether he'll guarantee the right of the South to secede from the North. We in Egypt... we do not recognize that England has the slightest right to ask us what we're going to do with Sudan. The Sudanese have got voices, they've got arms, they can shout if they don't like us. It's nothing to do with Britain, who is neither related to them by race or religion or anything else, to ask what's going to happen to them.
Thank you. Next question, please.
I'm Gorbal from Egypt. I would like to address Lord Wilmot. Your Lordship mentioned the sanctity of the treaty, the Anglo-Egyptian treaty, and that England is called upon to defend the Suez Canal. Don't you believe it is the same tone that Russia has, the kind of treaties with her satellites, to defend the satellites from Western imperialism?
No, I think it's entirely different, because we are willing at any time to negotiate a change in that treaty, and we have offered to alter it and to go out of Egypt entirely if the rights of the people of the Sudan are protected, and that we have a duty to do.
Thank you. Next question here.
Kashishian of the Arab News Agency. Mr. Ernest, Israel has been asking for peace with Arab states. Arabs have placed their condition, return of refugees back to their homes. United Nations has approved this resolution. Israel has been defying United Nations for 3 years and this resolution. Should Israel continue to defy United Nations, and what should be done?
The question is never proper, it seems to me, of should a nation do this or that. I like the last part of your question. What should be done? Seems to me that you cannot now, as against the realities of Israeli, force 700,000 people to go back to Israeli. Not force them, but force Israeli to take them. I would suggest a consideration of what I proposed previously, that the free nations of the world finance the Arab states with vast sums for irrigation and agricultural equipment so as to resettle the 700,000 Arabs in the refugee camps now in the Arab states.
I'm sorry. Do you mind if I butt in there?
Yeah. All right.
I'm afraid that's a policy that will never be effect. It's recognizing that Israel must get her own way. She doesn't want the Arabs. who owned the land, whose homes were taken from them, she must have her way. She is a pet darling of America and the United States and the United Nations. But the poor Arabs must put up with those refugees, keep them out of Israel in order to relieve Israel from the burden, the tired feeling of having them on her hands. Nothing doing.
Mr. Hunt?
I understand the pet darling theory, and I think there's a lot to it. But I want to suggest this. Do you really think, as a practical step toward peace, which we're debating tonight, that you now can force the Israel state to take the 700,000 back and still have peace?
Professor Salim?
I want to remind everybody that there is a decision by the United Nations that these refugees should return to Israel. Are we not to carry out the decision of the United Nations just in order to please Israel? Or because they're not practicable? What talk is this?
The moderator finds himself between an irresistible force and an immovable body. The result of that clash seems to be an inconceivable smash. And I trust we won't let that happen here tonight. We'll take the next question.
It's for Professor Salim. Are not perhaps the governments of the Arab states using their resentments against Israel and Great Britain, leaving aside the question of the justification for these resentments, to disguise their failure or reluctance to take measures to raise the level of life, standard of living in their own countries?
Professor Salim,
you are now voicing the favorite prejudice that most people have when they hear that the Arabs want something that is not palatable to the West. I assure you, there is not a country in the world that has done in the last 12 months, we needn't go much further, as much as Egypt has done in the way of social reform. We are well aware of the need for such reform. We are putting everything possible to carry it out. We can't be expected to do more. But that doesn't mean that turning to put our house in order, we must forget our duties to our dignity and our position as an international country in the world.
Thank you. I think we ought to have a word from Dr. Voss at this point, who's just come back from Israel.
Mr. Denny, I'd like to say that for me, too, it's news that the Arab states have accepted the principle of partition. For had they originally accepted, there would never have been the aggression from the five Arab states, which caused the plight of the Arab refugee, a tragic plight. Furthermore, I'd like to note that there is also a Jewish refugee problem, and the Jews of Israel have taken care of that problem. They have put those people to work, not only Jews from Europe, but Jews likewise from the Arab lands, from Iraq, from Yemen, from North Africa. I think those are considerations which likewise should be taken into the whole picture. And therefore, I'd like to point out, though I do not agree entirely with Mr. Ernst about this pet darling idea, I do believe that at the present time, we must focus attention upon the need for peace. And the Israelis have talked about the possibility of making a generous contribution to the reintegration fund and the possibility of making reparations as part of an overall peace settlement.
Thank you very much, Dr. Boss. We have time for one more question.
My question is directed toward Professor Salim. Isn't the nationalization of British oil properties in Iran likely to discourage further investment of foreign capital in the Middle East?
Well, that's one that Mr. Ernst raised.
I don't think that it's likely to interfere with the flow of capital to the East, because as I see it, there are already oil companies in the Arab world who are not affected by the trouble in Iran. If you realize the trouble in Iran is really due to the niggardliness, to the harshness of the contract signed between some weak Iranian government and the present Anglo-Iranian oil company. If we go over the border to Iraq, or better still, to Arabia, where the American Arabian oil company, Aramco, you find that they are paying those governments at least six times as much royalty as the Anglo-Iranian are paying Iran. That is the cause of the trouble. I don't foresee any difficulty.
Thank you very much. Maybe, Lord Wilmot, your companies will have to pay six times as much in order to get peace out there. And I do want to thank you and Professor Salim and Mr. Morris Ernst for your contribution to tonight's program. I'm sorry our time is up, but in just a moment I'll tell you about our subject and speakers for next week.
Well, friends, that was a memorable town meeting you will certainly want to preserve. Do you know why so many people subscribe regularly to Town Meeting Bulletin? The reason is that town meeting is almost as provocative in print as it is on the air, and most town meetings are chock full of information. If you're not now subscribing to the town meeting bulletin, or if it's not in your public or school library, get busy and remedy the situation at once. The bulletin contains the complete text of each program, biographies of the speakers, lists of reference material, and listeners' comments about the preceding week's program. You can begin your subscription with tonight's program. Mail $1 tonight for the next 8 issues, or $5 for a full year, and send along your comments about tonight's discussion. Individual copies are 15 cents each. The address is Town Meeting Bulletin, Town Hall, New York 18, New York. Town Meeting Bulletin, Town Hall, New York 18, New York. Now to tell you about next week's program, here is your moderator, Mr. Denny.
First, let me remind all of you that you may obtain a copy of tonight's provocative discussion and the next 7 issues of the Town Meeting Bulletin by sending your request to Town Meeting Bulletin, Town Hall, New York, 18, New York, enclosing $1. Single copies are 15 cents each. Next week, from Denver, Colorado, where we are to be the guests of the Citizens Conference on Government Management of the University of Denver, we'll discuss a major problem that concerns the welfare of our entire nation. Have we, here in the United States, failed to educate for democracy? The first speaker, Dr. Thomas K. Sherwood, is calling for more scientists, more engineers, technicians to meet the threat of advancing communism. Dr. Victor L. Butterfield, president of Wesleyan University of Middletown, Connecticut, believes that we must train men in the art, or science, of human relations and the responsibilities of self-government if we'd avoid war and chaos. So plan to be with us next week and every week at the sound of the crier's bell.
Town meeting next week. Have we failed to educate for democracy? Town meeting next week. Everybody listen.